Welcome back to That You May Grow, a podcast recorded here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. My name is Jared Hammond. I'm one of the ministers here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ, and I am with my fellow minister here and a good friend and brother, Preston McElyea.
Good to be here as always. Always a pleasure to do these recordings, and especially these days, now that we have a guest with us for each of these, makes it a little more interesting, and always good to have somebody else in here with us.
That's right. We have with us this morning Caleb Hamrick. You are preaching there at Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh, Texas, at what's the name of the congregation there?
Greer Boulevard. Greer. That's Church what I thought. Yes, sir. Yeah, we're really enjoying it out there. My family and I moved out here about a year and a half ago now, and we're really enjoying it. Sweetest people ever, part of that congregation. Of course, I know every minister says that. But that's one of the blessings of ministry, right? We get a whole new family everywhere we go. So really enjoying it out there, yeah.
I'm not sure how you manage to, like, do any work. I don't know if you stay, do any office work or anything like that, because I know the lay of the land over there, and you go, like, just a couple miles down the road, and there's the peach orchard that has really good ice cream.
Efforts, yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, so that would probably be my office if I were in your shoes.
I've been down there. I'll say between that and the new Whataburger in town, I like to help local business.
You got your locations picked out.
Yes, sir.
Break time locations.
There absolutely.
You know, I don't know if we even mentioned it to you, but we did have we'll have two questions at the end of the podcast, and then of course we have one question now that we've asked all of our guests on this particular season. What size shoe do you wear?
Well, in boots, I'm a 9EE, and then tennis shoes at 11.5.
9EE and 11.5. That's a big difference.
Yes, sir.
The reason we ask is, you know what they say, you can't really get to know a man until you walk a mile in his shoes, so we're going to slip on our 9EEs in our boots or our 11.5 in our tennis shoes, and we're going to take a mile-long walk in Caleb's shoes and try and get to know him just a little bit better, and more specifically, talk about the work that's going on, mission work, different works overseas, things of that nature, because you've got a good bit of experience in that, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm in my, I guess 7 years. I'm in my seventh year working with World Bible Institute, but I was also raised in a missionary family. My dad's been in mission work since 2000, so 24 years now, which is crazy. But yeah, I've been involved with it. It is by far one of my favorite things ever. The fact that you can do it as a job, it blows my mind. Right. I love it.
With your dad being involved, you know, in it, and you seeing that growing up, is that kind of what gave you the desire to want to get into that work?
Absolutely. I was really blessed in that regard, because when I was 10 years old, I got to go to Tanzania, my first mission trip. And man, talk about culture shock and all of that. It just completely blew me away. So I became very interested at that point. By 8 years old, I decided I wanted to be a preacher, wanted to work in ministry at some point in some way. And then I was able to go on another trip again when I was 16 and kind of teach a little bit there or be in on the Bible studies and have input. And after seeing just how people were impacted and how many lives were changed in just such a short period of time, I thought I have to be involved in this.
I'm sure at 10 years old, it looked like a whole nother world.
Yes, sir. It was, as far as I was concerned. Very different. I quit complaining so much in the fast food drive-through lines,
right,
you know,
because right.
Over there, I mean, if you order something, they got to go find it and kill it. So you sit there and wait sometimes 3 hours or more. you don't send food back. You're grateful for what you get. So
right, right.
10 minutes in the McDonald's drive-thru sounds pretty good to me.
So obviously, you know, your dad had a big impact on you in that. And that's, it seems like at times whenever you see the missionaries and their families, that it never seems like it's just the one individual themselves. It seems like the family is always involved. And, of course, that's an important aspect of it, whether they're there with you or not, just the
right.
ability for them to still be at home and continually praying for you, checking on you, all of those
right.
types of things.
Absolutely, man. The support that you get from your family, that you need to have from your family. because I'm in a very blessed situation where even when I was doing World Bible Institute full-time and wasn't doing preaching as a full-time position, I still wasn't away from home too much. The way World Bible Institute works is we will go and check in on the schools 1 to 2 times a year, but we only go, most of us, only go for 1 week to 2 weeks at a time. So you're talking 2 trips, at most 2 weeks at a time, so maybe a month out of the year you're not at home with your family. And then, of course, you know, we travel around locally trying to raise support and things like that, but they can come with me on those trips. Mm-hmm. Those are more fun whenever you got everybody with you. But having that support system, knowing that my wife is taking care of our kids and that she supports what I'm doing, I don't have to worry about them while I'm on the other side of the world, because if I did, I wouldn't be able to get anything done. So that's very important. I'm glad you brought that up.
And when you were younger and first kind of had your first chance to go with your dad, do you have other siblings?
Yes, sir. I have a younger sister, but she is special needs. Okay. And then I have an older brother, but he's about 11 years older than me. So he was out of the picture already by the time I was there. So.
So you and your dad went into it for that first trip, I guess, and that was your experience with it?
Yes, sir. That was me, my dad, and my mom. We actually were able to leave my sister with my grandparents for that trip. But that was life-changing for sure. My dad's first trip was in 2000, and he had absolutely no interest in doing mission work. But somebody asked him to come teach, and he was like, okay, but I'm going to train preachers. And that's what he was wanting to do, either work at Brown Trail or maybe work at Fried Hardeman, something like that. And he got over there, and it was actually to Ukraine, I believe. And dozens of people obeyed the gospel in that first week. Mm. And he just, he's told the story so many times. He said he was walking home one night and looked up at all the lights in the apartment buildings, and he thought, if I just had more time, you know, if I was here for another week, I could probably reach that entire apartment complex. We don't have that thought when we're here. You drive by an apartment complex, you're like, I hope I get one family out of there. But there's just so many places throughout the world where they're starving for the gospel. Right. And it's just so encouraging to be able to tap into that. And then it encourages us back here, because we know the gospel is what has the power, not the speaker, not anybody else. It's God's word, and it can still impact us here. It's just a little harder to reach people that feel like they have everything they need already. So that's the challenge we face here in America, is trying to reach people who have everything at their fingertips, right?
That's right.
So it's a lot more easier, a lot more accessible, I guess I should say, to reach people in these third world countries where they're starving for some sort of hope, and we can grant them eternal hope. And so it's much more appealing.
Yeah. And that's, I know you had mentioned, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was sitting here thinking, you know, that'd be a good question to ask, and you answer that for us without even having to ask it. But I know you mentioned that at 10 you went with your dad to Tanzania.
Yes, sir.
I know you mentioned you went on another trip at 16. Was that back to Tanzania?
No, sir. That was to Ghana and Togo, and that's in Western Africa along the coast there. And that was a really great trip because it was a group trip. We were actually we were at the Colleyville Church of Christ at that time, and we took a few different families with us. I think it was a total of maybe 16 or 19 of us all together, and it was really encouraging. And one of the best things about it was one of the members from our church was baptized while we were over in Ghana. She was, I think, about 13, 14. And they had to send people out in the river with spears to check for alligators or crocodiles, whatever they are over there, and make sure there's nothing in the water that could get her. And so they stood guard, and her dad went in and baptized her in a river in the middle of Africa. And then we immediately looked for a place to wash her off, because it's very, very dirty water. But the fact, I mean, who around here can say that? I was baptized over in Africa on a mission trip. That's just an awesome story she now has to share. Right. So it's a very beneficial trip for sure for a lot of people.
Well, you know, you definitely, you know, for me and Preston, we're just kind of, we would not really have a clue where to begin in trying to prepare, you know, to take a trip such as that. What, you know, for somebody, say, that is maybe thinking about or trying to get involved with missionary work, what are some of the steps that you have to take when you're just getting ready to prepare to make one of those trips?
Well, to prepare for one of those trips, there's a few things you have to have in mind. One, you have to be you have to enjoy wanting to travel. And what I mean by that is not just going to see the world. I mean, the plane rides sometimes are pretty long, pretty lengthy. The longest one I've sat on was 17 hours long. So, and I spilled my drink all over myself in the first hour. So that was a long, fun one. But you have to get used to that constant sense of travel because Tanzania is the most recent place I've been to. I'm heading to South Africa here in June. But that trip to get to Tanzania takes about 30 to 35 hours, depending on layovers. So you're awake for most of that time. And then once you get there, you have to be awake enough to find out where your hotel is and everything. Now, the best part about this is once I get to where I'm going, I'm meeting a Christian brother there that I either know or have talked to, and I know they're going to take care of me. So I can relax a little bit. But you just have to get used to traveling because every day we're moving, we're going somewhere else. But you also just have to realize what all you're going to be undertaking on this trip. It depends on what kind of trip we're doing too. If I'm taking a group with me, then I have to plan out an entire schedule. I have to make sure everybody has a part that's, you know, busy, able to be active. Depending on what kind of group, we'll have a VBS day, a ladies day, ladies classes, gospel meetings for the men to be involved in, Bible studies. But if I'm going over there specifically as a survey trip for World Bible Institute, that's a little bit different. We're meeting the school and the staff for the first time, seeing if we can work with them. We'll have a bunch of different paperwork, go over curriculum. It's a lot of meetings. But the most common one, and this is what everybody does, Spencer Ross mostly takes care of those survey trips for us. He's our vice president. He seeks out these new schools for us. But whenever we do these survey trips, or I guess I should say check-in trips, go back to Tanzania, make sure the school is doing good, the students are doing great. We try to do a gospel meeting in the area, do some door knocking too that same day to kind of prepare, and the gospel meeting will last a few days. So right beforehand, we'll walk out in the village and invite people to come and tell them right where it is. And then in the mornings, every morning we'll teach in the school. Whatever subjects they need us to teach, we try to prepare. But regardless of the trip, I always take with me at least 6 to 8 sermons, even if I'm only there for 3 days, okay? Because it doesn't matter what you prepare for, they want you to speak on something else. So make sure you bring something, you come prepared. And my dad has a story of he went over to India just to meet some people there, and then they had this great big gathering. He's like, oh, this will be great. I'm looking forward to attending this. And the guy gets up there and he says, welcome, everyone. We're so glad to see you. We have Brother David Hamrick here with us, and he is going to speak on the Holy Spirit and women's role in the church. Brother Hamrick. And my dad just sat there for a moment, I think said a silent prayer, and then got up and tried to say something, right? So the more prepared you can be, the better. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. But once you know what you're doing, you can know what to expect. And if you ever come with us on a trip, which y'all are both and anybody listening is invited to come with us on one of these trips, then we tell you way beforehand, you know, what to expect and where we'll be going, what we'll be doing. So there's a lot that goes into it, but it's all good. I enjoy every part of it for sure.
What do you do in order to, I guess, prepare for a different culture? I know at times in some of the different places you're dealing with different languages as well. How do you prepare for some of those types of barriers?
That is a great question because we run into different cultures. We run into different languages, run into different currencies, right? How do we deal with the money there? So whenever it comes to different cultures, again, going back to Tanzania, we have a school in Babati, which is just about 2 hours south of Arusha. A lot of people know where Arusha or Kilimanjaro is. It's just about 2 hours south of there. Our school is in an entirely Muslim area. There are 5 mosques, and there is only 1 church, and it's the Church of Christ that we put there. No churches of any type of Christendom in the area. One Assembly of God was there, and they lasted less than 6 months because of the extreme Muslim population. Not because they were harmful or anything like that. They've all been very nice, but it's just everybody there has been a Muslim. Why would they change, kind of thing? So going there, we do door knocking, but we have to be very respectful of the culture. In the Muslim culture, the man is the one that's in charge. But oftentimes he is the one that's at work or away. So when we go to the houses, a lot of times just the women and the children there. And we just ask, can we pray with you? Would you mind coming to this meeting we're having later? There's going to be, you know, some food and some fellowship too. And sometimes, most of the time, they're very receptive and say, absolutely, we'd love to pray. Here's what you can pray about. You know, here's what's going on in my family. But sometimes they say, if my husband finds you here, he will not be happy. I don't push that issue. I say, yes, ma'am, I understand that. But the whole time we're talking is through a translator because I don't speak good Swahili. And by that, I mean I don't speak really any Swahili. So we have a translator with us, which is our director of the school there, Brother David Bai. And he's very well known in the community. So people see him coming, they know who he is, and then here comes these two Wazungas, these two white guys following him around. And we stand out quite a bit over there for multiple reasons, but they will just yell at us, Wazunga, Wazungu. And I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. If some of the people on staff hear me talking in Swahili, they'll get on me because they speak Swahili. But they call us out, and like I said, we stand out. But we just have to be respectful of the culture there and realize what's going on. But 9 out of 10 times, people are very welcoming. It's really a great culture, even in the Muslim situations where you would think, do you want to stand offish a little bit? Most of them in the areas we've been to are very receptive. Now, we also have a school in Pakistan, and I have not gone to that one. In Pakistan itself, it's not so bad, but a lot of persecution is coming over from Afghanistan into Pakistan. And so be praying for that work, that it doesn't continue too much. But for the most part, we have great success in crossing over those different cultures. Yeah. To me, I've been doing it for a while now, so it just comes second nature to be respectful. But to some people, I forget to tell them, like, hey, don't just walk up and shake somebody's hand or take their picture. Some cultures think if you take their picture, you're capturing their soul in your phones. Don't do that at all, right? Some cultures don't shake with the left hand. That's very offensive if you do that. And other reasons for that, too. You know, toilet paper isn't the most available everywhere that we go either in some of these villages. So different reasons for that. But you just have to be respectful. Do a little bit of research beforehand and know what you're getting into. But one of the most impressive things when it comes to the different cultures is how far our dollar can go. In Tanzania, last I checked, it may have changed since then, but our dollar, one of our dollars equals 2,550 of theirs, okay? So I went to the airport just to exchange a couple hundred dollars, you know, a few bills worth for the week I was there, and I'm getting stacks of their currency, their money, and I'm trying to hide it in my backpack because I know these people only make, you know, an average teacher's salary is about $150 a month. Well, here I am just exchanging $500 to pay for the hotel and everything for the week, and I'm trying to hide all of this. And so it's just amazing how far the dollar can go, even in just supporting that. Because if we had $500, well, that could support, you know, 5 to 7 students, I think, in Babati. So, and that's for a couple different months. So it just goes along a long ways to try and help them out.
I'm sure, you know, kind of like you mentioned just a moment ago, taking the time to learn more about the area, about the people, their culture, and being able to show that you have studied that and that you have that appreciation, you mm-hmm. know, for them and their culture, I'm sure that goes a long way, even in the evangelistic work, you know, that you're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's different greetings that you say to people. Jambo means hello in Swahili. That's a very informal, hey, how you doing? Hey, what's up? But there are, I'm not even going to try to do some of the some of the harder ones, but there are ways that you would address somebody who's an elder, your elder.
More respectful kind
yes,
of
Yes, absolutely. Be more respectful. There's a way to address a woman. Be respectful to her. There's a way to address a single woman versus an elderly woman. Mm-hmm. So you just, if you can learn that, you're right. It absolutely makes an impact. You walk into somebody's house and go, hey, what's up? And they're like, okay, you can get out of here, right? But you come in and you show respect and you say, is there anything we can pray with you about? And then they're a lot more open to it, for sure. So that's a good question.
Well, you know, even with difference in culture and everything else, the amazing thing is how the gospel is still able to break through the cultural divides and everything else. And I know you've already kind of mentioned even some of the stories with your dad, some of the specific lessons that they're looking for. Mm. And we might talk about that here in a moment. But thinking specifically about the need that's there, is there any type of an evangelistic sermon or anything like that, at least in your experience, that you've seen seems to really drive the point of the gospel home maybe more than some others in these places?
I would say so, but it's really regional, right? So in the Philippines, their culture is reversed from ours. And what I mean by that is 90% of the time, the man stays at home and watches over the kids, tends to everything at the house, and the woman goes to work. There's several reasons for that, but one of them is because of caretakers, people who can work as nurses, and people who can clean houses and things. They can get really good paying jobs, but not in the Philippines. They have to go to Hong Kong or somewhere in China. But that's actually, it's kind of sad, because what they pay these Filipino women is actually less than what they would pay a Chinaman for that same job. But it's quite a bit more than what they would make in the Philippines, so everybody's happy even though they're being underpaid. But because of that, when you go to the Philippines and you talk about the man's role, right, we're supposed to be the spiritual leaders of our household. Whenever you start to talk about that, it kind of, they give you a look like, what do you mean? I'm supposed to be the leader. And so with them, that resonates a little more. That makes a little more sense. Y'all may know who Manny Pacquiao is, the famous boxer that came out of the Philippines. The reason he's so popular over there is because he is the exact opposite of what their culture is. He literally built his empire as a man with his fist, right? I mean, that's the complete opposite of what they do. So he is on everything and every advertisement. He's got all sorts of endorsements over there. He's everywhere. But they look up to that because it's not what they used to, but you can tell it's kind of what they want to be. They're longing to be in a sense of leadership or in a sense of leading their family, when really it's kind of the opposite than what it is here. But in Africa, well, not the entire continent, but places that I've been to, Tanzania, Ghana, and others, they are wanting to be leaders, but they don't know how to be leaders. What I mean by that is we teach the importance of elders and deacons in our schools whenever we start these schools or work with these schools, because, and we can talk about this later, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of different churches being planted even within the same year in the same region. And when you have that, that's a bunch of infant churches, right? That's a lot of new converts. And then there's the preacher or the minister there that's kind of helping things get going. It can become difficult for that person who's been in charge for all that time to then transition to having an eldership or deacons. And so that's the struggle there. It's not that they don't want to be leaders. It's that they are leaders and they kind of like being the leader. So now we have to transition to, okay, that's not God's design for one person to be over the church. We need to have deacons. We need to have elders. So it just varies as the short answer to that long answer I just gave. But there's definitely ones that seem to prick the hearts a little better in different regions than others, for sure.
You know, there's one thought that just came to mind, and this is kind of away from some of the original questions we had thought about, you know, going into this, but in different areas, is there still a struggle with idolatry in any form that you see, you know, with some of these different areas? Is it more prevalent in some places than it is in others?
Absolutely. That is a great question. Yes, for sure. Especially the more you go out from the cities in Africa. There is a lot of tribes, and there is a lot of, it's definitely idol worship, but it's a lot of voodoo influenced things where they still believe in magic and things like that. And that's one of the struggles is, as Preston mentioned earlier, the gospel transcends time, it transcends culture, it goes into people and it fits into your life. But it also chips away at culture too, because there's some things in these tribes where we go and we teach people that they can no longer do, right? After they become a Christian, I mean, it's like anywhere else. You can't live the life you had before. And sometimes that means getting rid of the witch doctor that's in town, right? Yep. You can't keep going to that same person. Sometimes it means the tribal chief who has seven wives, he's got to change the way he's living, right? And then how does that affect the culture? How do you deal with that? And one of the things I try and let people know is one of the things I love so much about the way we do this is we go over there and bring the schools to them and let the locals teach the locals, because the locals there know their culture. They know the language. Certainly they can communicate it a lot better than I could, but they're able to handle those kind of local discrepancies, right? Because they know what's dealing, what they will run into over there. Just like over here, we know what our issues are whenever we try to reach out to people. Over there, they know, hey, a lot of people over here still drink blood. They still deal with the eating of the meats that have been strangled and things like that. There's different idol worship going on. There's voodoo. There's a lot of, polygamy going on in these different tribes. But they're equipped for that. That's the kind of stuff they look into. Whereas here, we might look more into, why don't we have instruments in our worship? Or why don't we have elders that are women today in our culture? That's more an American thing than it is over there. That's not so much an issue over in Tanzania, but they're just a lot more equipped to handle the cultural questions than I would be. So that's why we let them deal with a lot of that instead of me marching in there saying, hey, you got to get rid of all that. That's not going to go over well, right?
Well, with the trips that you've been on now, and I guess you said you've been doing eight years?
Seven. I'm in my seventh year now, yes.
So in the 7 years and then the trips you've been on, what type of, I don't know if it's the right way to put it, but success stories, what types of, how have you seen the power of the gospel in the lives of these people in the communities, whether it's, you've only been the one time or maybe you've been and then you've been able to travel back and see the growth since that point?
This is the part that I think I could spend the most time talking about. Firstly, I know it's all God that's doing all this. We know that. It's not anything that any individual is doing. It's what God has been doing through man, through his different instruments that he chooses to use. But man, there's success story after success story. Like I mentioned, that school in Pakistan that we have, it actually averages, they do a summer outreach program, and they average almost 200 baptisms within 3 months over in Pakistan. I had no idea that this number is outdated now, but there's over 40,000 Christians in Pakistan. We have over 40,000 brothers and sisters in the Middle East. When I think Middle East, I think Muslim, right? But Christianity is actually growing a lot over there. I have seen people in Muslim communities like the one in Babati, where you think, how in the world are you going to reach anybody? We knew it would be a challenge going into that community. But we also saw an opportunity there, and we've been averaging dozens of baptisms every year. 90% of them are women, because in Islam, the teachings are, if you're a woman, you're still going to go to hell, even if you join our faith, but it's not going to be quite as bad for you. I don't know. That doesn't sound too appealing to me, and apparently it doesn't sound too appealing to them either. So 90% of them are women, our converts over in the Muslim community, specifically in Babati. But that comes with its own challenges too. You know, then the church has to step in and help take care of them, because a lot of them do get disowned by their families for abandoning their faith.
When the women are looked down upon more so there than most areas, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That is absolutely correct.
So it makes it a great challenge for the church there to grow and thrive.
Absolutely. And, I'm glad you said that, because it brings a point up where some people, especially in our country, view the Bible as putting women as second-class citizens or putting them down because we don't have the same roles, right? We all have jobs. We're all supposed to be working, but our roles are different. That's God's design for that. So they think of, because we're not equal in every way, then we're not the same. We're not valued the same, and that's not true at all.
Right.
But really, when the gospel goes to these different countries, these different areas, these different religions, it actually uplifts the women and puts them in a place to where they are now respected. They are a part of the community. They do have a voice. They can help in these different areas. But the biggest success story I can say is I joined at the end of 2018-ish, in the middle of 2018. And so I only have the numbers from 2019 and to now. But from 2019 through 2023, God has reached over 35,000 people through World Bible Institute, and that's baptisms. I can't tell you how many Bible studies are going on, because that number grows every single day. I mean, we have people that over in Ghana and Togo is by far our best example. India is doing really good too, but they will have summer programs, and they'll reach thousands of people. One of our guys on staff, Keith Johnson, he wanted to take pictures of every baptism that he saw while he was over there, and he goes for about 6 weeks at a time. He's actually from South Africa, so when he goes to Africa, he says, I'm going to go home for a few weeks, and I'll be back here. But he said, I'm tired of telling people numbers because the numbers don't sound real. He said, I want to take pictures of every baptism that I see while I'm there. And you know what happened? He ran out of room on his camera. There were so many baptisms going on, he couldn't capture it all. But these numbers, I mean, in just a couple of weeks, we'll see over 1,000 people be baptized and over 200 churches be planted. And you're like, that's, you know, I've wrote two lessons in those 2 weeks, right? Because we've got so much going on, and there's people being baptized by the thousands throughout the world. So that's the biggest success story to me, is that the gospel does have power, mm-hmm. and it is changing lives, and it is affecting people. It's just, it wouldn't surprise me that there's probably more Christians in Africa now than there is in the United States, because they're just grabbing hold of the gospel and not letting go. So that's probably the biggest one.
But it has to be such a thrill, you know, it, just listening to what you were saying there, it immediately took my mind to like Acts, you know, and how the church was growing and how these congregations were being established. And, you know, you have these all these people that are being baptized, but all these areas y'all are going to, if I'm hearing you correctly, y'all are helping to get these congregations started, helping them to understand how that congregation should look as it pertains to leadership and all these things. Mm-hmm. So you're trying, just as what we see in the book of Acts, you know, where the apostles seeing them go through and they're establishing these congregations, you know, and you get to see that firsthand, you know, through this yes. work. So it's got to be very thrilling and humbling and just, you know, I don't know what all you could say to explain that. You know, I haven't been there, but just thinking about it, and it sounds like a wonderful experience.
Oh, man, it is awesome. And I'm in the same situation with you. When you hear those numbers, you think first century, right? 3,000 people obeying the gospel. And we think like, oh, man, that must have been a great time to be alive. Then it's still happening today.
Right.
It's just we don't get to see it firsthand unless we go to those who are so receptive. But it is absolutely humbling is a very good word, because you get to see the power of God and you're like, wow, all I did was like preach a sermon. And you have to, one of the things that Preston asked earlier about language, when you go to write a sermon or take a sermon that you used before, you have to go through and rewrite it and make sure you don't use any, you know, slang in English or any idioms that could stumble up or mess up. Or if I said trip up, the interpreter, he'd be like, why would I trip over something? Somebody says, I take my hat off to you. Like, that's a compliment. The interpreter would say, you're not wearing a hat. What would you take off? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So you have to go back and make sure. So what we're speaking, what we're teaching, is not some deep lesson where we go word by word and look into all the different syllables of the words. We teach the gospel. I mean, just the story of Jesus. And that's where the power is, right? That's why so many people are reached, because the gospel has the power, not because we've done so much study or we've become so prepared. It's because of God's word that these people are being saved. And that's the most humbling thing for sure, seeing that firsthand.
I can imagine that that's definitely praying a very similar prayer that Paul does in Colossians 4 whenever he's asking them to pray that he might make the word manifest, that he can make it clear like he ought to speak. And so especially then whenever you've got to go through it in your own language for it to be translated into another language that you really want to make sure it is as clear as it can be. But that's another lesson as well, just to stop and think that sometimes it's that simple message that we as preachers can easily get in our heads and think we've got to do something complicated and just very, very deep, when sometimes simple is the best way to go.
Right, yeah. You don't always have to have alliteration in every lesson for the point to get across, right? I hear that so often. But no, it really is the gospel that has the power more than anything else. So that's a huge – it's just so encouraging to know what you're doing has purpose. You know what I mean? I mean, what we're doing obviously has purpose. Even if we worked for 20 years and we saved one soul, all that effort was absolutely worth it, right? But when you're able to see this, I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of people being saved, and for the past couple of years, we've averaged over 11,000 people each year. I mean, so that's just amazing to see that we are having an impact. God is having an impact, and he's choosing to use us, right? That's just amazing. And when I say us, I mean not just everybody on staff, but anybody who's ever given or supported this work or prayed over it. I mean, that's one of the most important things, right, is keeping that work in your prayers, because I believe that's more important than any other way of supporting or helping out, just offering up prayers to God, for sure.
You know, I know we've kind of maybe gone a little bit away from the order of our list that we kind of thought out the questions as
we're,
we
were
would
testing
have.
You. We're throwing
back and forth. You know. But, you know, and I'm glad you said that, Preston, because I don't know if we necessarily touched on the curveballs. There's obviously going to be times, you know, and just like it is in regular ministry, you're going to have times where things come up that are unexpected, and you're going to have to handle that situation accordingly. I'm sure as it pertains to, you know, the mission work, there's probably things that you never would have imagined might come up, you know, curveballs. How do you handle those situations, or what are some of the worst ones you faced in in your work?
And that's a good question. One of the things I did not foresee whenever I joined the staff, or even, I mean, before I was on staff, I was still engulfed in mission work because I've been watching my dad do it. I've been going on trips with him. I've just been consumed by it. But one of the things I didn't realize till I was on staff was the amount of people that would reach out wanting a school of preaching. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges is how do you tell somebody no, right? Because I'm not the guy that they're supposed to reach out to. It's either supposed to be my dad, the president, or Spencer Ross, vice president. They kind of handle the directors of all the different schools and everything like that. Each of us is then delegated to these different regions and these different schools, and that's how we handle them. But so I'm just one of the 12 guys we have on staff, and I get a letter or a message on Facebook almost every week where somebody says, hey, I'd love for you to come out to this area and, you know, can we have a school of preaching here? And oftentimes, I mean, more often than not now, because we're becoming more well-known, we have to tell people we can't right now. Okay. And that's just, I mean, you're telling people we can't have a school of preaching. Why would I ever say that? But when you've got these other schools that are able to generate 40 students a year, and then you've got this other one that's, you know, a guy that has no land, and he's like, but I would really like to preach. And you're like, that's great, and here's the nearest school that we're working with, but we can't put one right there in your village right now. I always try and tell them not yet, not no, but not yet. We'll see what God wants to do. But also, I'm sure y'all have experienced this, but my plans for the future and God's plans for the future tend to differ quite a bit, right? My dad has really wanted to work in China, and we actually went to Hong Kong, actually to Wan Chai in the end of 2019, middle of 2019, end of 2019. And just a few months later is when COVID hit, and it actually came out of there. And we were just getting ready to work over there, and it was going to be expensive because that area, it costs more to live there than it does to live here. And so we were trying to figure out how much money we'd need to raise and everything like that to try and get a school going. We thought we already had students in mind. And then God, you know, told us no. And I was like, I'm so glad that we didn't get our way, because if we did, we put all this money into that school. Then COVID hit. Well, then it would have been a wash, right? Everything shut down. And even over there still, there's some complications. So having to deal with what we want to do versus what God tells us to do, right? What He shows us to do is one. But also when it comes to working with these different schools and the different individuals, man, the most important person is the director. Mm-hmm. For one, he's got to speak English because I can't learn every language of all the different places we go to. But two, he has to be a very trustworthy man, a Christian, someone who has been preaching the gospel for a long time, someone that's well-respected in the area that can draw in students. I mean, you look at our preacher schools here, we look for the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. For whoever serves as the director there, has got to be well known. So it's just very important. And we have worked with some guys that have been recommended to us, and it doesn't take long to figure out, no, we can't actually work with this person for this reason or for that reason. It's probably not going to work out to the best interest. I hope everything works good for him. But we tend to work more with schools than we do individuals. And some people really want to support an individual missionary. Hey, that's great. If you want to do that, keep doing it. That's awesome. But we work with schools, and so what that means is we raise funds for the schools. How can we get a dormitory here? How can we find a way to make this school self-supporting? And that's another success story, is we try to figure out how all of our schools can be self-supporting so that it's not just a kind of a bottomless money pit where, you know, you just keep pouring money into it and hoping it works out. Where instead, in our timeline's roughly 5 years that we try to get to, from the time we've been working with the school, it's up and running, to the time it's either beginning to be or is fully self-supported by the end of it. So we don't have to keep pouring money into it. Now we can move on to the next project, and they're good to go. They're set up. But if we don't have that director in place, I mean, he's the foundation for that. And sometimes they move, right? Sometimes an illness happens in their family. They have to step down. Well, how do you deal with that? Most of the time, we have to go over there. That's not a Facebook message or a Zoom call. That's a, okay, we're going to figure this out. And then we'll figure out our return flight home, right?
Right.
So, but those are some of the challenges. I'm sure there's more I could think of, too. But those are probably the biggest.
Well, we've already discussed it a little bit, but how can people get involved in the work, whether it is by means of a congregation that's interested in supporting or seeing the work, or whether it is just an individual that that might have an interest or the ability to help? What are the ways that they can help in supporting the work?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Firstly and most importantly is prayer. Like I mentioned, I think that's by far the most important. We read about it in the power of prayer, and then we get to see it acted out, right? God answers all of our prayers, and it's just so amazing to, when we line up what we're praying about with what he wants to get done, we actually see the results of it, sometimes pretty quickly too. But as far as people who are wanting to help, the best way you can do that, or I guess I should say the simplest way you could do that, would be to go to our website if you're wanting to help out in supporting or contributing at worldbibleinstitute.com. There's a big donate button right on the right-hand side of that screen there. You can click on that and then designate Caleb Hamrick, and you make sure you get all of my reports. I send out at least bi-monthly reports. Like I said earlier, I'm going to South Africa. And it'll be my first time going there. I'm actually looking forward to that. But going to South Africa in June, so you'll be sure to get a report about that in July. But on top of that, and this is to y'all as well as to anybody listening, we always love taking people with us on these trips, especially teachers who'd be willing to teach in the schools, willing to do gospel meetings. It is always a blast, but I do have to warn you, it is life-changing. The last guy I took with me this past fall, he had been on 3 planes his entire life, and he was in his late 30s, and he got a passport, and I took him. I think we hit 4 different countries in all of our flights and layovers, and about 8 different planes in total. And about 10 days. So now he's a seasoned traveler, right? Dragged him all over the world. But not only that, he'd never done a gospel meeting before. And he did one in front of a group that was 90% Muslim. And he had a smartwatch on. And it was really cool because it tracked where we went in the village. He had digital satellite images of where we went. But it also had a heart rate on there. And on that third day, whenever he talked about the Old Testament, because they agree with the Old Testament, right? The Muslims agree with the Old Testament, and they respect Jews, and they're supposed to respect Christians too, because we're people of the book. But they believe, where we differ, is that Jesus is a prophet and not the Messiah, and that Muhammad just came after Jesus. He was the last prophet. So they agree with the Old Testament. So he started with the Old Testament on the first day. The second day, he started looking at messianic prophecies of the Old Testament, which they believe in. And then the third day was the day that heart rate started to go up a little bit, and he started talking about how Jesus was the Messiah to a bunch of Muslims. And they had questions afterwards, and he showed me his heart rate, and it was just ticking pretty high, but you couldn't tell it by looking at him. He did a great job, and he answered the questions and handled it perfectly. But then a few months later, he was like, hey, I still have my passport. Where are we going next, right? Because he'd never been out of the country before, but now he's like, I want to do it again. I want to go help people again. And that's what happens. You end up, you know, just loving it and wanting to be a part of it. And it's life-changing. I would encourage as many people as possible to go on a mission trip at least once in your life, because it changes your total outlook on life. First, you realize just how blessed you are here, but also getting to see what all God is doing, not just in your neighborhood, but throughout the world. It really opens up your eyes to see all of that.
That would be, and I think I know a lot of preachers who, I feel like would love the opportunity and the experience, and maybe just a little bit gun shy and just, it's a lot, when you start thinking about, okay, actually doing something like that and going, somewhere you've never been, around a culture that you've never experienced. Now, you're still taking the same message, right? You're mm-hmm. still delivering the gospel, but, it would be something that would be, I think, for any preacher, I think would be a great experience. And I haven't been. We had one time we were going to try and go. We were going to go to Costa Rica, actually. And we had all gotten our passports. We were ready. We were going to take that trip, and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So that ended our first and only attempt to do missionary work.
Mm-hmm.
We never even got to do it. But
well, and that actually in part is what kind of made me take that final step to go to preaching school, because I was able to go on a trip to Costa Rica.
That's right. You actually did get to go.
I was down there for about a week and a half, and so I was able to help out and just kind of see things there. And
yeah.
Like I say, that's kind of in part anyway, because I was in college at the time, and I was between my junior and senior year, and so I kind of had, all right, do I want to go down this path? Do I want to go down this path? Still trying to kind of figure it all out, and I took that trip, and it was on the plane ride home that it's like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. See, it solidifies it, for sure.
Who would have thought? We were expecting we're going to have Caleb come in and tell us about mission work, and now here we are thinking about mission work in another sense. Now we're like, pondering the ideas here. No, but it's a great work, man, and we're so happy for those like you who are willing to put so much time and effort. It's not just an easy thing to do. There's a lot of sacrifice, I'm sure, that comes with that. So, we greatly appreciate you and all those. I know Spencer. I know he's a very busy guy. He's all over the place. I mean, he's got
busiest guy I know.
Hours and hours and hours of traveling, constantly. So there's a lot of work that goes into it,
Yeah. There is, but I can't think of a better job, if I'm being honest with you. You're getting to preach the gospel, which is already awesome. You get to take the gospel to a receptive audience, which is amazing. And then you get to come back and tell everybody how awesome your trip went. I mean, it was just the most encouraging thing. You're constantly being encouraged with all of it. And you mentioning Spencer, he's awesome, one of the busiest people I know, always has three or four jobs at least going on. But everybody that we have on staff is just, man, they're perfect for where they're at. You see them, one guy, Brandon Ferguson, for example, had never been to India before. And my dad was like, would you be interested in going overseeing India work? He's like, I've never been, but sure. And then this last time he went for 3 weeks because he's like, I just wanted to stay a little bit longer because I'm enjoying it so much. He's been over there 4 times now, I think.
Right.
And just fallen in love with the mission work there and the people there. And that's just a part of it, man.
Brandon, he's all the way out on the East Coast, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, up in Maryland.
That's right, in Maryland. My wife and I want to say, I know Jesse Lee went. I was trying to remember. I guess Geraldine and Brie Lee, that might have been the trip they went on with them. But they actually went and did a VBS with Spencer in Northwest. They went and helped with that VBS. So, but that's cool that you see brothers from all over the United States who are involved in this work, working all around the world.
Yes.
For the gospel. So that's a great thing to see.
Yeah, and it's a small world in the church, and it's even smaller in mission work. I mean, y'all know J.J. Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a lot of our videography for us, trying to help us record things and helped out with our websites. I'm sure I could list several other people that y'all know, too, who've been available or helped us. I say we had 12 people on staff, but there's hundreds of people who've contributed in one way or another, gone on trips. So we're really blessed in that regard, for sure.
Well, Caleb, it has been a real treat to have you here with us and to discuss mission work, because it's not something that I have any knowledge about. Preston has a little bit of knowledge about it. So, it's all learning for me here, and we're glad that you were willing to come and share your knowledge about mission work with us. We do have two closing questions that we would like to ask you. And I guess, Preston, if you want to go ahead and throw one of those out there.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I almost forgot about those questions. So what is your favorite book of the Bible?
Favorite book of the Bible. If you can believe it or not, I actually spent probably more time for these two questions trying to figure out what the answer would be than for the rest of them. And I couldn't narrow it down for the favorite book. I chose two. I kind of cheated. But they both start with J, so maybe that could count a little bit as one. It would be Judges, the book of Judges, because you constantly see that story that's all throughout the Old Testament just on repeat, where God saves his people, they follow him, they fall away, they call out for help, God saves his people. And I really appreciate that. I mean, it's 21 chapters of that over and over again. And then the other one is a really kind of unique book, I think, and it's Job. And it's unique because it's really just focuses it on one man throughout the entire book, over 40 chapters, where it's just about Job and what he's going through. But you also just see how the book starts off is the most intriguing thing to me, how it starts off and then how it ends with God talking to Job. But Satan approaches God, and first thing God does is say, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And that just completely changed the way I look at temptation. So that whenever I'm being tempted, in my mind at least, it could be God saying, "Have you considered my servant Caleb? There's none like him in the land. He's a good and faithful man." And Satan says, "The only reason he serves you is because you put a hedge around him." God never denies that, right? He just says, and then he puts another one in at the beginning. And he says, just don't touch his health. And don't touch, you know, his land or whatever it was at the beginning. And then by the end of it, Satan has access to everything and he touches everything. He says, just don't kill him. And so it changed my perspective on temptation by looking at the book of Job. And then Judges is that how even when I fail in temptation, God's still there wanting me to come back and he's going to provide a way of escape, right? He's going to help me out. So those two are my favorite book.
Well, I don't think we've had, we've had a pretty good variety so far as the books. We haven't had, I don't think, any overlap.
No.
No overlap on the books. So that's been interesting. That's been really fun to listen to. And then, of course, the other question, favorite person of the Bible, except Jesus, because that's the easy one.
Well, I feel like that's the right one, right? That's the one you should say.
You know, if we wouldn't have put that that stipulation in there, probably 90%.
We would learn a lot about people.
That's right. You know? Well, that's true. That's true.
Favorite person of the Bible. I went back and forth on this one a little bit too, because if it's not Jesus, most people say Paul, right? Because ideal New Testament Christian, I mean, wrote the majority of the New Testament. But again, I'd have to go back to the Old Testament, and I went with David. Just that compliment of being a man after God's own heart and trying to understand what that means, because we get the whole picture of David, or at least most of the picture of David, including his faults, the fact that he was a terrible father. He was not a good leader of his own home, good leader of the nation, but not his own home. He was an adulterer. He was a liar. And ultimately, he became a murderer. And God calls him a man after his own heart. And I'm like, how in the world does that make any sense? And I recently did a little class on this, is why didn't God take away the kingdom from David? I mean, we see him remove the kingdom from others. Why didn't he do that with David? And this is just my opinion. But I think it's because David comes back, and God knew that David would come back. And most of the book of Psalms is written after David comes back and what he's been through and the challenges that he's faced. And so overall, I mean, he's a inspiring leader. He was an awesome military tactician. I mean, David and his mighty men were feared throughout the land. He had an amazing faith. And he also has the same name as my dad, so bonus points for that. But overall, David was probably my favorite person of the Old Testament.
See, and you even could have taken, you mentioned next to Jesus, most are probably going to point to Paul, and you with the mission work you do, I mean, that would have just been a natural choice. But we can tell you put thought and effort into this.
A little bit, yeah. Like I told you, those last two questions are the ones I was like, man, I can only pick one, and I couldn't for the books. So I cheated on that one, and then I jumped back and forth on the other one.
One thing we'll try and do, we can put some information there with this podcast, with the information for the podcast, as far as for World Bible Institute or any of that kind of thing. We could add some of that information there with it, email, any kind of stuff like that.
Absolutely.
That way this will go along with the podcast. But again, man, we just we really appreciate you and all the work that you're doing. We're glad that you took time out of your busy day to come and do this podcast with us.
Yeah, I think you needed a break in those 11 and a half tennis shoes. That's what you got. No, you got your
I got my boots on.
Got the double E's.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you're moving and going with all the work, you needed a little break to sit down and give them a rest.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I really have. I always love talking about mission work, and I really appreciate the work that y'all are doing through this podcast. Once y'all, you know, invited me to be on it, I started looking into it, and man, I really enjoyed it. I'm really grateful that y'all are doing this and able to reach out to not just the people here in Mount Vernon, but who knows how many people are going to be affected through this podcast. So thank y'all for the work that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Too.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We appreciate you. Well, we have pretty well almost covered an hour, so that's probably all we're going to discuss for today's podcast, but as always, for those who are listening, we appreciate you continuing to come back and listen to the podcast, and we hope that you're edified and uplifted in learning more about the different topics that we have been discussing in this season. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we just hope you continue to grow in God's Word, that you continue to grow in your faith, that you continue to grow closer to God each and every day. And if there's anything that we can help you with as it pertains to that growth, please feel free to reach out to us through email, or any other means of contact that you can get a hold of us. We'd love to help you with that. But that'll be it for today. This is That You May Grow.